Welcome, everyone. Thank you, worship team. I was actually able to be here on Wednesday for the VBS as well, and I couldn't get those songs out of my head for days. It was so fun. It was such a good experience, and I was so excited to see a lot of leaders, a lot of people who just wanted to help out, wanted to be a part of it, and I was blown away. It was just so much fun, and the fact that worship was just such an integral part, where we would, you know, we would sing and we would do other things, and then we would come back and we would close the day with singing. And the fact that, you know, we have worship here every single Sunday, worshiping together as a group, I think it's such an important part of who we are as Christians, of who we are as a community of believers. And I want to thank you, Dustin. I want to thank you for putting so much effort into making that happen. I want to thank you, the other worship leaders, as they're doing the same thing. It's such an important part of who we are as Christians. Now, I should probably start with my name, because some of you might not know me. My name's Rudy. I am the ministry apprentice, as Dennis had said already, here at LFC. I work with youth and young adults for the most part. But I get to do a lot of different things, and part of that is preaching. And I'm honestly, completely honest here, I'm so honored to be able to do this, because we're all learning. It's a part of a process, and I get to practice. I get to learn. I get to grow. I get to make mistakes in a safe environment, in an environment where I know people are going to encourage me and help me through, you know, the parts where I struggle, the parts where I don't do as well, maybe. But I get to learn, and that's such an awesome opportunity that I get here. And I want to thank you, both Dustin and Dennis, for allowing me to do this. And obviously, I want to thank all of you for encouraging me in that. I've said it before, I'm going to say it again, and I know Dustin has said it. I love stories. And the fact that, you know, three times this summer I got to, this is the third time, get to stand up here and tell a story is just so valuable to me. Because the way I learn is through stories. The way I get concepts and understand things is through stories. I don't really have that brain for maths necessarily, not English either. But the idea of finding somewhere—that's where parables for Jesus were so important, because he was teaching people through stories, and he does that today through Dustin, through Dennis, through us preaching, reading through these stories together. We get to learn something about the character of God. And it's so cool, because I grew up with these characters. I was born in a Christian home, and so I got to grow up with Daniel, with Moses, with Noah, with Elijah and Jesus and Peter and all these different characters of the Bible. They've been part of my journey. They've been kind of my invisible friends for 20 some years. And I love the fact that when we go back to them, we get to learn more things, that we get to learn different things, because now, hopefully, as adults, we get to look at these stories maybe from a different perspective. And we've talked about a lot of stories already. I think it's been like 11, something like that, stories that we've gone through. And that's a lot of stories to remember. I'm so excited, especially with Cain, when we talked about Cain and the unique perspective of how it wasn't really about the murder of Abel, but it was about Cain allowing sin to control his life. And that really, for me, hit home when, you know, I was able to speak to you guys about Gideon and just reading through the story of Gideon and how so very differently the Bible actually showed it than I thought it was. Whereas I always had Gideon kind of as a scared little dude who was pushed into everything. The Bible kind of portrays him as somebody else. And I was super excited to be wrong about that because it meant that I learned something. And so today we're going to talk about, as Dustin had already mentioned and Dennis mentioned last week, we're going to talk about the story of Daniel in the lion's den, a story that hopefully most of us know to some extent. And if you don't, well, we'll get into it today. So it's going to be fun. The whole part of storytelling, I think, is I'm not the greatest storyteller. I think Dustin does really good. He really set the scene for us last week very well, and I'm going to build on that a little bit because it's kind of like a sequel today. And the storytelling I love so much is kind of like we're asking some questions. Excuse me. We're asking some of those questions of, if I was there, what would I smell? What would I see? What would I feel, hear, and taste even? Like, you know, we talked about last week, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego coming out of the oven and these guys going up to them and smelling them, seeing if there was any smell of smoke on them. And I thought that was such a unique picture that you don't really get to see when you kind of when you don't read the lines or between the lines. And so as we're going through the story today, I want us to picture some of those parts. And one of the quickest, easiest ones that I noticed right away that I kind of missed in earlier read-throughs of the story was the fact that Daniel was actually quite old at this point. According to different historians, he might have been working with up to four to up to seven kings in his life. And this was very much at the end of his life. And that was something that really struck me. But we'll start with some context first. At this point, Judah had been brought into exile, Babylon, where God was punishing them for not for worshiping him. They were doing other things. They were worshiping the gods of the country that they of Cana, and they were worshiping different gods, and throughout the entire time, and we talked about the judges last couple of weeks ago with Samson and Gideon, of how constantly the people that, you know, called themselves people of God didn't worship God. And Babylon came in and they ripped everything apart. They ripped people from their homes. Daniel and his friends and thousands of other young men and women were brought into Babylon for different things, exploited in a lot of different ways for their ability, for their looks, for their just. It was a bad time for Israel, and just a lot of corruption within the young men and women of Israel because of the fact that, you know, they were in a new context without any help from their home, without any ability to, you know, go to synagogue every Saturday or something like that. And so throughout this time, and we heard about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego last week, these four men that this book of Daniel speaks about, stood strong in their faith. And time passes, and they do their we have the story of, the burning oven and Rakshak and Benny being thrown into it. And then we continue the story, and the author picks up the story again of Daniel in chapter 5, well, with Belshazzar, and the story of the hand writing, mini, mini, Tikal Oparsin on the wall. And it's a very interesting story for me because it's very reminiscent of Joseph, where all of a sudden somebody remembers, hey, we know a guy who can interpret some of these things. And then they bring in Daniel, and Daniel interprets the things, and he gets made the third highest man in the country. And then immediately the kingdom collapses the same night. And Daniel and the advisors are getting thrown into a whole new situation. And that's kind of where we're picking this up. Whereas now a whole new, the Medes and the Persians were now picking up where the Babylonians were being crushed. And at this point, Daniel is pretty unsure of his situation. And then we pick up in chapter 6. We'll probably read the whole thing, so pull out your Bibles. If you don't, you can probably get it on your phone too. We'll pick it up at verse 1 of chapter 6 and go from there. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom. We heard the whole list of satraps and all of the different things last week. So these were just people who were in charge of things, in charge of different parts of the country. And so Darius appoints 120 of them with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Again, kind of reminiscent of the story of Joseph, right? Just this idea of he's put in a position and he excels. He does well to the point where the king himself decides he's going to make him the sole administrator of this entire country, basically so the king doesn't have to do anything. At this point, the administrators and satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption within him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find a basis of charge for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of God." I was reading through the story, and it was at that point I was like, "How are you so amazing at being a person?" Because, you know, I look at my own life and it's kind of like, that's not really what my life looks like. When somebody were to dig into my life and say, the only thing I can find is that this guy loves God, and I'm going to use that to somehow bring about his downfall, I would be okay with that. That would be a really good description of my life. Anyway, so we're going to keep going. So the administrators and the satraps went as a group to the king and said, "O King Darius, live forever. The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and have forced a decree that anyone who prays to any god or man during the next 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be thrown into the lion's den." Now, interestingly enough, they already have a lion's den. So, you know, This isn't necessarily just a one-off. Daniel isn't the only one who was ever thrown in the lion's den. It was common practice, almost, it seemed. Now, O king issued the decree and put it in writing so it cannot be altered in accordance with the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be reappealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now, when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows were opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. If somebody were to tell me that, you know, going to church is going to be illegal next week and I'm still going to show up next Sunday, I wonder how much of a... These are a lot of my own thoughts where I was just going through the story and I was just like, how would I react in this story? How would I feel? And a lot of times I would come back and say, I would probably not do the things that Daniel was doing right here. And so he goes to home, he prays, and then the men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they knew what was going to happen. They knew he was devoted. And he was like, well, we're just going to stand here and watch him open his window and pray to his God. So it should be pretty simple. And that's exactly what happened. So they go back to the king and say, did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or man except to you, O king, would be thrown into the lion's den? The king answered, the decree stands in accordance with the laws of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. Then they said to the king, Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the decree that you put in writing. He still prays three times a day. Evil. This is evil. These guys, like... Then when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to the king and said, remember, O king, that according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed. So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you. This is where the story of Daniel goes a little different than the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because they're very similar stories in a lot of ways where, you know, these men stand up to the laws of the king and say, no, we're still going to worship God. But then and then they're thrown into a dangerous situation, and then they're rescued from that situation. Spoilers. But the reality is here, the king is actually kind of scared for Daniel. Whereas Nebuchadnezzar was kind of like pretty angry at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when he threw those guys into the oven. And I love these little subtle changes in the story, but the story is still very much the same. And so the stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring. With the rings of the nobles, so the Daniel situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace, spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, O king. The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted his God. No wound was found on him. So he wasn't hurt when he was thrown into the den, even as an 80-year-old man. I can imagine that would hurt, probably. But he wasn't hurt in any way. And then he got back out and completely unscathed. The king was so overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. These lions were hungry. Then King Darius wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language throughout the land, may you prosper greatly. I issued a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And so Daniel prospered throughout the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. What struck me towards the end there was all of this. The timeline is a bit wishy-washy. We don't know exactly when this happened. We can safely assume this happened within a week, though, of the decree being issued, Daniel going straight home and praying, and these men just waiting for Daniel and pounce on him. And then Daniel being thrown into the lion's den, being rescued from the lion's den, and then Darius giving this decree. And what struck me was that the original decree was actually made for 30 days. And it was made so it wasn't going to be repealed or changed according to the laws and traditions of the Medes and the Persians. And all of a sudden, as Daniel comes out of this lion's den, everything changes. Now there is a saying, everyone should fear and reverence or revere this God of Daniel. All of a sudden, it's not about the king anymore. All of a sudden, it's not about the decree anymore. And I find that so unique because it's this contact with the God of the universe that all of a sudden changes tradition. All of a sudden, ancient tradition of not being able to change certain decrees now gets thrown out the window because Daniel got saved. And it made me question my own life a little bit, where it's like, you know, I confess that for my life, I come in contact with the living God on a daily, on an hourly, on a minute basis. I say that, you know, I'm surrounded by him constantly. I'm, you know, the Spirit living in me. Where is that visible? How does that change my life? How does that change my actions? And it was a little bit embarrassing because for me, I see the power, I see the Spirit moving, I see God doing things in my life, but I wonder how much more powerful he would be able to be if I let him, if I wasn't so stubbornly focused on my own little ways of things needing to be done, my own little traditions that I have, and where I think I know what's best for me. And so I kept coming back to this point of just where is the change? Where is that submission to the will of God? And something really surprising happened. I started looking back at the stories that we've gone through, especially in Daniel, and I looked at the different stories in Daniel, and something that really struck me about the entire book of Daniel was how much the author focuses on the worship of God. We right from the start, you know, we have the young men from Judah coming, and they're being presented with these different temptations, these different unclean foods that they would not want to eat. And other people were eating them. Those four decided to stick with water and vegetables, and they are being blessed by God with a really, like, you know, you can read it in the first chapter of Daniel, just being blessed beyond everything. And then we have this story of we can go back, honestly. We have the story of the three youths, right? The three Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are being saved throughout really, really dangerous situations. And on the same side, in the same story, we have Nebuchadnezzar, who is very much focused on himself, worship on himself, and realizes in the end how dumb that was. And then he does it again in chapter 4, which is a story you should definitely all read, because that's an interesting story, in my opinion anyway, where Nebuchadnezzar, again, just becomes so full of himself that he decides to, you know, he says some things. And then God says, because of your pride, you're going to live like a wild animal for a couple of years. And it's only until Nebuchadnezzar realizes that it's God who controls, it's God who's worthy of our worship, that he comes back to himself, that he realizes how stupid he acted there. And it's just over and over again, the author of Daniel just reminds us that the reason people were being blessed, the reason people were hurting in that respect, and even just the reason that that the kings came to their senses was because it was supposed to be about God. It was supposed to be about worshiping our Creator, and it wasn't about worshiping ourselves. It wasn't. I think chapter 5 of Daniel, verse 22 and 23, really make that very visible, what the author has intended. And it says, this is the story of the writing on the wall. And at the end, Daniel comes and he says, do you remember how your father Nebuchadnezzar acted like a wild animal for years and then came to his senses? And then he says, but you, his son, O Belshazzar, have not humbled yourself. Though you knew all of this, you know the story of what happened to Nebuchadnezzar, but you didn't humble yourself. Instead, you have set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets from the temple brought to you. You and your nobles, your wives, your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver and gold, of bronze, of iron, wood, and stone, which cannot see or hear or understand. But you did not honor the God who holds in his hand your life and all your ways. Therefore, he sent this hand that wrote the inscription. And therefore, the same night, Darius took over for the Babylonians. And so I really, it came back to this idea that the author of Daniel just focused so much on worshiping, on making God our primary, our only, almost in a way, source of, the thing that we're worshiping. We see that throughout the entire life of Daniel. You know, when he's younger, when he gets older, Daniel's desire is to glorify God. And when he's faced with, you know, literal death, he goes home and he prays. And through that life of worship, he allows others to come in contact with God. He allows others to step into this position of change where tradition is being thrown out the window because they get to experience God. Something that I learned as a kid, and some of you might have learned as a kid as well, is the catechism. Depending on the shorter, the longer, the greater, the Westminster catechism, they all start with one question. And the catechism, basically a catechism, if you don't know what it is, it's just a summary and an exposition of doctrine. So as Christians, we believe that there are certain things that we believe are true. And those reflect in our, even in our church's statement of beliefs and the ABA statement of beliefs, those reflect in that. And the catechism, the first thing that the catechism asks is, what is the chief and highest end of man? And what is the ultimate purpose of man or woman? And the answer is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. The ultimate purpose that we have is glorifying God. And I think when it comes back to Daniel and his life and his and in the just in the lion's den, it just proves again that it isn't about his life, it isn't about his power, it's not about his wealth, it's about God for him. And when we go into our routines, when we go into our daily lives, I wonder about that. I wonder about that myself. Is this it for the week? Is an hour or even half an hour of worship, is that it for my week of worship? If, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel, and even other people that we've talked about in the past, if their lives were just so focused on worshiping God, on making him their priority, is that reflected in our lives? And I'm not pointing fingers, because honestly, the only finger I can point is right here. And it doesn't come up nicely necessarily all the time. I always read this story as a kid, and I was just like, that'd be so cool. You know, people would be like, you coming with me because you're preaching the gospel or whatever, and you're going to go to jail. And I was just like, that'd be so cool to stand for God and just say, no, I'm not going to fall. And then just being surrounded by lions, and then I would go to school and do everything the other kids did because I was scared to tell them about my faith or what I did on the weekend, because youth was lame and I didn't want to say anything about that. And so it just reminded me again how difficult it can be sometimes to even face a condescending smile or somebody just walking away from a conversation because they're uncomfortable with the topic. And I got to ask myself, if people are willing to die for their faith, am I willing to live for God's glory, for God, for worshiping God? And that's the question I got to ask myself daily. And I hope that you guys ask yourself those questions as well, because in the end, if it's not about God, this is just glorified karaoke, or holy karaoke, as Dustin puts it sometimes. I want to pray for us. I want to leave that there. But can we live for God's glory? Father God, in a lot of ways, we're not like Daniel. We struggle, and we have our own opinions, we have our own thoughts, we have our own mindset when it comes to different things, and a lot of ways, we're very selfish. And I want to pray that as we look into our lives, as we look into this next week even, that we could take some time and just intentionally worship you in our actions, in how we live, in our lifestyle, in our thoughts, that you would be our priority. That just like the author of Daniel just describes this constant back to you, back to worshiping the God of the universe. I want to pray that we could be people that would reflect the glory and the majesty of the God that we trust, that we believe in, the God that we follow. Amen.